Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday morning MV Pro call. Today is May 26th, and I'd like to welcome those of you that are here live, as well as those of you listening to this via recording, which, of course, you can do by subscribing to Motor Vitality on whatever podcast application you happen to use, or by going to motorvitality.com, where you can listen to years and years and years worth of archives. I'm going to start the call off the way I do pretty much every week, which is by asking, is there anything anybody learned this last week that you wish you had known before? Anything that happened that is worthy of sharing with other professionals across the country, or anything we can help you with? Any questions you might have, or anything we can help with? Anybody have anything?
I have a quick announcement.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jim.
No one. This pertains to the MV Marketplace and the Lamet In Touch discs. We have a few orders out there that we have placed with Lamet as far as to ship directly to customers. They say they're supposed to be running production around June 20th. For all others, this is across the country, all suppliers, any of the newer orders, it's going to be about 6 months. So please be patient. My recommendation is if you are running low, order those as soon as possible because they might get some of our stuff in with the June 20th production, but they're struggling. So just want to let everybody know, be patient. We're trying.
Okay. Anybody else have, thank you, Jim. Anybody else have anything that happened this week that that they want to discuss? Okay, then. All right, so let's jump in and talk about our topic today, which I think is going to be a little interesting. A couple of years ago, about 8 years ago, I remember I took a helicopter ride from Las Vegas over to the Grand Canyon, and I was astounded. We flew over as part of the helicopter ride. We flew over Lake Mead and Lake Powell and the Hoover Dam, and it was really incredible how, especially from the air, you could see where the lake had been and where it was currently. And we talked to the pilot about it, and the pilot at that time informed us, said that, he actually flew over a couple places where they had actually moved entire cities, in some cases a mile or more closer to the shore, because you had all these cities that, all these little towns, these little boating towns that had built up, and you could see inland where the roads, where they had built the roads, where all the infrastructure had been. There were still some buildings that hadn't been able to move there, but a lot of the structures had literally been moved. They had moved this entire town over closer to the shoreline because it was, a couple miles away from the lake, and these were businesses that relied on the boating community. And it was really interesting to see that, that it had gone down that low, and that they were, in order to move an entire town, move structures like that closer, you have to, I guess they were not expecting the water level to come back. And I remember thinking, okay, what if the water level did come back at that point? Now they're all going to be flooded. They're definitely in a flood zone if they're where Lake Mead used to be. So for those of you that are not familiar with Lake Mead, it was in the 1930s, Lake Mead was a man-made reservoir, and they dammed up part of the Colorado River and created this huge reservoir, and then built a Hoover Dam from that lake. Lake Mead is what supplies the Hoover Dam. The Hoover Dam does two purposes. It has its biggest purpose, of course, is electricity. Okay, so huge amounts. It supplies a lot of electricity. If you've ever been to the Hoover Dam, it's really an amazing structure. But it actually supplies electricity to Arizona, Nevada, California, you know, it's tons of cities all over the place that it supplies electricity. And a lot of states also get a huge portion of their drinking water from Lake Mead and Lake Powell. And so this has been, you know, at the time I flew over, I remember our pilot saying that it was at 33% capacity. And when it went down to about 25 or 26% capacity, Hoover Dam was in danger of shutting down. Well, that was 8 years ago. We've continued to have droughts, and now that's actually happening. I mean, they've got the emergency intake valves on at the Hoover Dam. The water levels are so low now, everybody's seen it. They're actually finding barrels with bodies, you know, because apparently the mob for, you know, people in Las Vegas, that was the go-to place to dump bodies. And the water levels are dropping so low now that they're finding all these sunken boats and all these bodies stuck in barrels or just like tied down at the bottom of this reservoir, because the water levels are dropping so low that, you know, it was 200-300 feet when somebody, you know, decided to, you know, drop somebody else into the lake, and thinking that what are the odds that that's ever going to be found? But they're getting found now, you know, and it's really an amazing story to watch. And it's a real life water crisis happening in our lifetimes. Is there anybody else seen the Lake Mead or the Hoover Dam or that area that's on the call? Has anybody else visited that and seen it?
I have been to the Hoover Dam and Lake Mead, yes.
And you can see on the sides of the rocks just the water level. I mean, you know, we're talking 50, 100 feet down where the water used to be. Anybody else been over there to see it?
Yep,
you can look at satellite images. Go ahead. Who's that?
Yeah, I've been there.
And what were your thoughts on it? Who's this? Who said that?
This is Brian.
Hey, Brian. So what were your thoughts on it, Brian? What you know, did you kind of have the same wow reaction that I'm describing?
Well, the dam was very impressive. When I was there, though, was at the beginning of the lake's shrinkage, so it wasn't a big deal at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
I've seen the newscast since. And I believe, no, I don't know for sure, so I'll keep that to myself. But, yeah, it was impressive.
Yeah, it is an amazing structure, but then to see this real world water crisis, you know, and for a lot of us that are in the Midwest, you know, I mean, I'm from Michigan. We're surrounded by the largest freshwater resource in the world, you know, and sometimes the lake levels get so high that the issue you have in Michigan are kind of the opposite, is the lake levels are getting so high that it's eroding the shoreline and houses are literally falling into the lake. You know, they have these huge sand cliffs there and along the west coast of Michigan. And you've got these gorgeous houses that 30, 40 years ago were built, you know, 100 feet back from the edge of the cliff, but now it's eroded. And these houses are, I mean, literally, you can Google pictures of these houses, like, leaning. Some of them are falling into the lake. I mean, it's eroding them out. They've had to be abandoned because they can't, you know, they're going to tumble. You know, they're going to collapse. And so it's, you know, it's easy to see that stuff on the news. And to when you're in the Midwest, when you have all the water and you have rain and you know, and you know, you think about the water there, but, you know, and I won't get into the politics of climate change, but clearly climate change is affecting water, you know, water and weather and rain patterns. You know, I mean, of course, this isn't the first time that Lake Mead has been this low. I mean, I think this is the lowest it's ever been, but in 1971, you had a mega drought as well, and Lake Mead dropped down. So it is cyclical, and it's possible that it will fill back up and come again, but it's been, you know, it's been happening. It's been lowering consistently now for, you know, for decades. So anyway, what I wanted to talk about today on our call, because I've just been seeing all kinds, if you haven't followed this story, it's really an amazing story. I come across every day in my Google alerts I get. There's more news stories and concerns about the electricity and the quality of the drinking water because, you know, they're having to ship it. You've got the water shortages. You got all the, you know, California and Las Vegas and Arizona. They're all arguing over who gets the most water and what it can be used for. There are some peripheral stories that I'm seeing. You know, California just had a big vote on whether or not to turn back on the desalinators, which a desalinator, when you're talking about a state that has the shoreline that California has, I mean, and does anybody know the technology they're using to desalinate seawater to address the drought that's, you know, the water shortages that California is having? What technology are they using on that? Anybody know?
Are they doing distillation?
No, it's reverse osmosis. They're massive, mega reverse osmosis systems. And it's kind of interesting when you look. So California actually just voted it down. They were trying they're for emergency use. There's a few of them in California, and they use them for emergency use, right? So when there are major water shortages. And you would think, okay, you start pumping water out of the ocean and desalinating the seawater, the salt water, you know, with reverse osmosis, that seems like a viable option, right? Until you really start thinking, I mean, and I won't get into too much of the science here, but it's not as easy as just flipping a switch and starting to run seawater through reverse osmosis. I mean, keep in mind that the total dissolved solids count for seawater is about 35,000 parts per million. Okay, 35,000 parts per million. That means that for osmotic pressure alone is 1 PSI for every 100 parts per million, approximately. That means in order to reverse the osmosis process alone, you just start with 3,500 pounds of pressure. The pumps required to pump that water, to produce water at that scale, are massive. Right, they're massive. So in order to pump that water out, now you're taking all that salt out of the seawater, right? Because, you know, when we think about a residential RO, what do? We just run, I mean, they're low quantity. So we're just running that back into a drain and it's going down. So the salt and the stuff that we're taking out of the water is, you know, it's not going to hurt anything to run it down into the drain. It's just such a low quantity. But now think about the massive amounts of salts that are being taken out of seawater. What do you do with all that excess salt? Well, it's not really cost effective to do anything else with it other than to put it back into the ocean. But if you're pulling fresh water out of that salt water and you're putting that salt at such a high concentrate back into the water, now you're killing all the sea life. The sea life cannot survive in salt water with that high a concentration. So if you're dumping, you're killing in that area, you're killing all the seaweed, you're killing the fish, the sea life, the ecosystem is being destroyed in and around those massive reverse osmosis systems that they're using. And so, you know, I mean, if you could take that salt maybe and ship it to the Midwest where it snows and put it on the roads, but, it's not cost effective to do that. I mean, the cost to do that is it's just not economically viable to do that. Not to mention those pumps, having to pump at such high levels to pump that seawater in. Think of all the sea life and all the aquatic life you're sucking, having to suck into those intake valves. You know, and yes, they're putting screens up, you know, around them to keep the sea life from coming in, but you're still going to have, you know, fish and smaller things that are not able to, that are small enough to get through those sea life. So it might keep the bigger sea life out of there, but it's going to suck everything that gets through those screens, those gates. It's going to suck it into that intake valve. So it sounds like it would be a good solution, but we're not quite there yet at that level, you know, to desalinate seawater at that level. I mean, They've got to come up with better ways. So, you know, distillation would be in, when it's hot and in the desert, Jen, you could probably create a massive commercial distillation system. In fact, there may be something out there, like some sort of a distillation plant, you know, where you create a massive greenhouse. But I don't know if you would be able to produce water at the quantity that you need to supply, you know, to supply the you know, the water usages out there, particularly since you have a lot of agriculture and stuff like that. So
I saw that on Off the Grid, Living Off the Grid. They had a huge distillation system, so they could you know, take care of their animals and everything else. And it is very interesting that you brought up the seawater thing, because when Tricia and I were out in New York, we were talking to somebody, and we were talking about, you know, that she lives in Los Angeles and the water drought came up. And this was just somebody, we were probably on the subway or something. And, you know, and they said, I don't understand. You live out there by the ocean. Why can't they just make water out of ocean water? And I used similar description. And then all of a sudden kind of the light bulb came on, you know. And, but that is something that comes up in conversation, because most people don't know the answer to that. So, yay.
Well, and the reason I thought, Jen and I thought this would be an appropriate topic for today was exactly that. Customers are seeing these same news stories. And I think it makes sense to be educated about, we are water experts. We should know what's going on within our industry. And then a quick little Google search tells you, you know, there's so many websites that have lists on water saving ideas. So I just printed one of them that had some ideas, and I thought I would just go through these in the last, you know, few minutes of the call, just to give some ideas, some tips for saving water, you know, as we are going through that. So number one, check for leaks. Everywhere. Check your toilets for leaks. Check to see if there are leaks. One of the nice things about our equipment, a lot of the equipment that we have out there, is we can actually go down and see if there's a leak. You know, most of the systems will actually meter a leaky toilet now. You can actually see what your water usage is, which is kind of nice. You know, that's a selling point for your equipment, you know, is that you'd be able to tell, to identify if you have a leak somewhere in the house, and then you just got to find it. But check the toilet for leaks. And what causes toilets to leak, by the way? We can fix that too. Leaky toilets, we can fix that, okay? Because sometimes it's hardness or scale that gets up around the seal, the water seal in the toilet. Sometimes it's chlorine in the water. A lot of times, in fact, it's chlorine in the water that goes in and destroys the rubber seals in the back of a toilet, and that's what causes a toilet to leak. So keep in mind when you're talking about this stuff that putting in the system, removing the chlorine, removing the calcium is going to help avoid those future leaks too. This one ahead is a list, and I looked at the date on this, and this is a pretty recent list too, but this second one said stop using your toilet as an ashtray or waste basket. I don't know who does that, but I guess. It says every cigarette butt or tissue you flush away 5 to 7 gallons of water, which is, I mean, 5 to 7, that's a really inefficient toilet if you're using 5 to 7 gallons of water. Most toilets out there, I think, use about a gallon and a half of water nowadays, that was interesting. Put a plastic bottle in your toilet tank. So that one, basically, if you just fill a bottle up with sand or something heavy and set it in there, then it raises the water level a little bit and you use less water in a flush mechanism. Take shorter showers. A typical shower uses 5 to 10 gallons of water a minute. Again, that's not, I think this one, they're exaggerating on that. I don't think this was a recent one, but I don't think most faucets are using 5 to 10 gallons a minute. Most of the shower heads now will only give you about 2 gallons a minute to shower, unless, you know, that you're taking flow restrictors out of there. But install water-saving shower heads. That's what a lot of people are doing. Although you do occasionally run across those people that have taken flow restrictors out of their faucet or they're buying one that doesn't have a flow restrictor in it. I run across people who are proud about having done that. They want that. Take baths. thought that was kind of interesting. A partially filled bathtub uses less water than all but the shortest showers. Turn the water off after, you know, while brushing your teeth. That's what a lot of us grew up with. That was kind of, if you guys, by the way, as I'm going through these things, feel free to jump in, okay, and say anything. We can go back to it. Check faucets and pipes for leaks. Even a small drip can waste 50 or more gallons a day. Use your automatic dishwasher for full loads only. That's one that I try and do. I still think about it, you know, with that. I like having my dishwasher, but I do try and only run it when there's a full load. Use the automatic washing machine only for full loads. So the automatic washer uses 30 to 35 gallons per cycle. Don't let the faucet run while you clean vegetables. So rinse your vegetables in a bowl or sink full of clean water. This one says keep a bottle of drinking water in the refrigerator. I would go further. I was looking at this, interestingly enough, and it doesn't say refill the bottles or anything, but it says keep a bottle of drinking water in the refrigerator. That puts a stop to the wasteful practice of running water to cool. Oh, that makes sense. Like beer in a cooler. Yeah, because a lot of people, they're waiting for the water to get cool, so they run it and get it all out of the faucet. So having cold water in the fridge. I don't really think about that because I have an RO system. So that's kind of interesting. If you wash dishes by hand, don't leave the water running for rinsing. So fill a sink up if you have one of those double sinks. I don't see that very much anymore. How often do you guys see double sinks in houses? You know, it occurs to me that just about everything I see in houses mostly are the single bowls in a sink, like a deep bowl. Do you guys, have you seen that, or do you see a combination of both? What do you see out there?
Some of the newer and remodeled are going with the big single sink, which
yeah,
I don't like.
This seems to be the trend. I think I mostly see the single sinks out there now, like the bigger ones, bigger, deeper ones. Interesting. I might have to do like an unofficial little mental poll to start looking at that. That's kind of interesting. Check faucets and pipes for leaks. Water your lawn only when it needs it. Deep soak your lawn. So when you do water your lawn, water it long enough for the water to seep down to the roots where it's needed. A light spring that sits on the surface just gets evaporated and wasted. So water during the cool parts of the day, that's better. Early morning is better because you then don't you can prevent the growth of fungus if you're going in the morning. Don't water the gutter, so make sure that your sprinklers are pointed to the right place. Put a layer of mulch around trees and branches that helps hold the moisture in. Use a broom to clean driveways, sidewalks, and steps instead of using a garden hose. Don't run the hose while washing your car, so turn it on and off. Tell your children not to play with the hose or sprinklers. What else are we going to do? I mean, you don't expect us to sit inside and play PlayStation all day, do they? The kids? No. Kids, go out and play. Go play with the hose. I don't know. Some of these, I don't know. I mean, I guess, look, if you're in a drought, we all have to do something, right? So, but I can hear. I don't want to tell the kids that because, like, the kids are like, but, Dad, we're saving water. My kids are older. It would be strange if my kids now, like, argued about wanting to go play in the hose, but whatever. Anyway, any other tips that you guys have? You know, there's a big one I saw that popped up. Seriously, this was something that was recommended was pee in the shower. I know that sounds crazy. People are like, ooh, but that is something I saw on one of the water tip lists was save the toilet water. You're in there anyway, and the water's already going down the drain. So anybody else have a tip there? And in the last 5 minutes, I want to talk about how to address it when people ask about the waste on our systems. But any other tips there that come up? So one of the most common concerns when we're putting in a reverse osmosis system that I hear people say is all those things waste so much water. And there is true, there is a drain to it, but my response to that in terms of the reverse osmosis, now there's a little difference. I mean, the reality is even a backwashing filter, you know, you are putting water down the drain on that, and sometimes significant amounts of water, you know, in a very short period of time, 80 to 100 gallons sometimes on some of that stuff. Softeners can use a little bit less if they're efficient softeners, but you're still, you know, every few days running, you know, 30 to 50 gallons of water in most cases down, literally down the drain, you know, to rinse the salt off, to have the soft water. So that, you know, that is something to address. But reverse osmosis systems in particular, people a lot of times say, oh, they waste so much water. And my response to that is this, okay, a toilet usually it takes a gallon and a half to 2 gallons of water to flush a toilet typically, okay? You got 4 people in the house, each one going to the bathroom maybe 3 times. That's, you know, 18 to 20 gallons a day just on normal toilet usage. A shower head that has a flow restrictor in it that uses 2 gallons a minute for flow and is, you know, a 10-minute shower is going to be 20 gallons of water. And when you take a reverse osmosis system, even an inefficient reverse osmosis system is going to, you know, the average family of 4 uses 2 gallons a day for drinking, cooking, and everything else, okay? Even an inefficient RO, say it's a 3-to-1 or even a 4-to-1, that means that for every 1 gallon of water it makes, to drink, it's going to throw away 4 gallons of water into the drain. Okay, even that at 2 gallons a day means that you're throwing 8 gallons a day into the drain. So my thought is, compared to the other water-using appliances in the home, whether it be a shower or a toilet or a dishwasher or a laundry machine, whatever you're using in there, the reverse osmosis system actually becomes one of the most efficient water using appliances in the home. And when you take that and you compare the good that it does, you know, the savings that you have with without having to buy the plastic bottles or throw away the plastic into the landfills or the oceans or all those things, you know, and again, what a lot of people perceive as being really inefficient is actually one of the most efficient. Are they also having those same efficiency concerns with the other water using appliances they have in the home? Okay. Final thoughts on this, on any of this? Any? Jen, any final thoughts?
Okay. Sorry, Kelly, I was trying to.
Yep.
I was trying to unmute my get my phone to come back on. So you mentioned, you know, water using appliances and stuff. Well, making sure that you're flushing your hot water tank every so often if you don't have a water softener, because that way when you go to start up your shower, you're waiting for hot water to come, and if it's not as efficient, then it's going to be a lot harder for it to warm up that water, and you're actually, you know, running that water a little bit longer. So I think making sure that, you know, your hot water tank is taken care of is a huge difference.
Yep. Okay. Well, that will take us to the end of this call. Everybody, thank you very much for joining us. Those of you that are listening via recording, always appreciate that too. Love to have you on live. Everybody have a really safe Memorial Day weekend. Don't forget what the day is actually honoring, but also enjoy time with your family and friends and doing whatever you're doing, and be safe. We will talk to you next week, if not before. So thanks, everybody.
Take care.